It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Welcome back, Cracked fans, to another edition of the Cracked Interviews podcast. I'm your host, Alex Gruskin. It's going to be one of those weeks here on this show where we have a plethora of college tennis content coming your way. In fact, with the NCAA round of 16 looming this weekend, we figured it was time to bring back one of our favorite bits here on this podcast. It's time for us to roll out our 2024 NCAA press row. Over the course of the next 4 days, I will do my best to interview each of the remaining head coaches for our 32 men's and women's teams still alive in the Division I NCAA tennis tournament. I will try my best also to ask each coach the same series of questions. Things like, what were the highlights of your 2024 season? What were the biggest surprises throughout the course of the year? What is the advice you would give yourself if you could go back to January and do so? And then, of course, we get into things like trivia, non-team-specific storylines, and so much more. I promise all of you will enjoy this exercise, and I sincerely hope this will help prepare all of you for this weekend's upcoming NCAA action. Of course, those round of 16 matches are going to be available on our Crack Rackets YouTube channel. Our coverage starts Friday, so hopefully this will again prepare all of you for that action. Hopefully you listeners will be inspired by what you hear and come tune into our coverage of postseason play. With that said, it's time for our 2024 NCAA press row. Westhoff, let's get to it. The man that sings tries it. The amazing Mr. Please, Please, Please himself. Joining us now on the podcast is a returning champion here on our Cracked Racket shows, a man, of course, whose team is undefeated still in 2024, entering the round of 16. It's the head coach of the Oklahoma State women's tennis program joining us on the show now. Welcome back to the show, Coach Chris Young. Coach, first of all, congratulations on the victories in your opening weekend of play. How are you doing here today?
Doing great. It's always a nice time of the year to be talking to you at this point in time. I mean, some good things are happening.
Yeah, well, it's a pleasure to have you back. And look, I had the opportunity to be on the broadcast yesterday for your team's 4-0 victory over SMU. That's where I want to start. I thought it was one of your crisper performances of the season. No playing around at the 2 and 3 double spots. I think 6-2 at 2, 6-love at 3. And then, you know, before I could even blink and get through my court introduction, Sophia and Ayumi took 6-love first sets at 4 and 5. And, you know, OB, Komari, I think it was all 6 courts ended up with first sets. Talk me through your team's opening weekend performance, how you thought the girls performed.
Yeah, I think it was solid. I think it was just kind of like a business-like performance. I think we did what we needed to do. I think that we had a lot of respect for, you know, the teams that came in. And with SMU, Alabama, we knew that they were talented teams. And if we didn't want to give them any openings. And so we wanted to come out really strong in the doubles, be aggressive. I thought the girls did that from the very start. And then we talked about after doubles doing the same thing in singles, just not letting, giving them any hope. And you know, I think we're fortunate to be able to do that. You know, I think SMU had a really tough grinded out match with Alabama 4-3 the day before, and you know, that's challenging sometimes to then turn around the next day after a 4-hour match and have a lot left in the tank. And so you know, we just didn't want to give them any hope there and shut that down. And I thought the girls, like you said, the two of the fifth-year seniors to get, you know, 6-love first sets. I think, you know, you look across the board and you're down pretty quickly. Even, you know, Komar at 6-2 first set, Lucia 6-3 first set. So, that you know, got to a quick lead. And I think then it becomes challenging. I think we still got to do a better job closing out matches in these situations, but you know, I think we did what we needed to do and put ourselves in a position to be playing this next weekend.
Your team is 29-0. You're very good at every position. We can break down the statistics more in depth. I'm going to approach today's conversation like we didn't talk three times during the Big 12 championships, and we haven't spoken a bunch throughout the course of the year. What were the 2 weeks the focus between the end of the Big 12s and the start of this NCAA tournament run? Was it about righting the ship physically, mentally? What were you guys doing to prepare for this postseason run?
Yeah, I think, you know, most importantly at this point in time, the reason that we as a Big 12 coaches had, you know, voted to have the 2 week break as opposed to like taking the season up to is to make sure that you're healthy. And I think we had to capitalize on that and make sure that we gave the kids a few days off. And, you know, we played a lot of tennis this year, 29 matches, a lot of tough matches. So we spent a lot of time on court. You know, I think at this point in time, you just really need to be dialing things in. There's not a lot of big changes that you're going to make at this point in the season, nor do we need to make because of the success that we've had this season. But at the same time, you don't want to get complacent. So I think there's, you know, there's a balance there, making sure that each kid is individually getting what they need. And, you know, some kids are healthier at this point in time than others. So that's a balancing act as well. But then the biggest thing for us is just sticking to the routines that have worked all season long. And I think that's one of the things that we've done is been very focused on our routines and how we are consistent with those things. And that's one of the things that we've prided ourselves on with our program, you know, for since I've been here is, you know, this is the kind of the standard. This is the way that we do things and just holding that high. And, you know, it gets more and more challenging as the season goes to, you know, as the pressure mounts and the stakes get higher. You just got to stick to those routines and really hold fast to those. And I think that's what we did these last couple weeks.
And I'm sure for you personally, it was nice to have 2 weeks, no tennis. You obviously behind the scenes doing so much to prepare for this NCAA tournament. And we appreciate all the efforts that you are making. We also both now had 3 extra weeks to prepare for Mrs. Greenwood's birthday party, which we both want to be in shape and looking our best for. But how did the approach to this offseason, 29-0, 15 years of experience at 4, 5, and 6, was it different than maybe your approach to offseasons past?
Yeah, it was. I mean, there's a few things that we have typically done, you know, with some of our fitness things that we've kind of built in you know, we enjoy doing. You know, one of those things we just didn't do because we felt like the kids were in a good place and, you know, you got to protect everyone's bodies and do some different things. And so it was more maintenance than it was, you know, maybe like a little bit of a late season push type thing. And that's more just, I think, trying to have the experience of being in this position before and understanding each team's different. So I think while you stay consistent to the things that have made Cowgirl tennis special, I think you also have to think about what's made this team special. And I think with having 3 fifth-year seniors, you rely on them to give some feedback as well and give them some ownership of the situation. And I think it worked out pretty well.
Consistency seems to be the theme because looking at the matches you guys played this season, I'm not saying there weren't times where someone was pulled and Raquel got opportunities because obviously those existed as well, but you've been pretty consistent 1 through 6. You're playing here every match that you've played. Again, the doubles teams, go time, you know what they're going to look like. That was intentional, it seems like, because I'm sure, look, on the right day, Sophia could play one. On the right day, Ayumi could play one. Heck, on the right day, Christina obviously could play one as well. She has in the past. Why not play around this season with the lineup, give everyone shots in different places? Why stay with what's, I mean, obviously it's worked, but why stick with it?
Yeah, I think that's the dilemma, and I'm not to say that we won't change something up. I mean, we're going to put ourselves in a best position possible for the remainder of the season. And I think that with the flexibility of the lineups this year, you know, we have those opportunities the next match and if we're fortunate enough, you know, the next weekend. So I wouldn't say that that's out of the realm of possibility, but I also feel like there's a sense of confidence and pride in our lineup and how it is. And we know that if we stay the course that teams are then going to change up on us to kind of match up. And, you know, it's like, look, I mean, we know that teams may make some switches and it's happened to us. You look at the 2 matches that we had with Michigan, you know, the first one and the second one, the lineups look completely different, but you just take pride in the fact that our kids are going to step up in their spot. They're going to own their spot. They're going to own their game and do that. And, you know, I think that's part of the consistency approach that we've talked about. And so I think there's a balance there of giving your team confidence in what we're doing is working and not feeling like we have to make any changes that might, you know, you throw our own team off. Sometimes you can overthink it and to the detriment of your own team of like, hey, I'm going to do this. And now the team thinks, okay, for us to win, we've had to change what we've done all season long. And so, you know, I think that that's something you have to analyze. What's the risk reward? And I haven't seen too much reward that's worth the risk taking of mixing up a good thing so far. Now, that's not to say, I mean, we changed a couple things at the indoors, you know, in the Stanford match, we changed the lineup there a little bit. We've done a couple different things. So, you know, there still could be things out there to go. I'm not just going to stand pat if I think it gives us the best chance to win.
I love to hear that. What's more difficult, 29-0 or Kristina Novak's 18-0? Because I could argue it's more difficult for her to be perfect every day, given, again, the seniors, the depth, all the options you have in your lineup, than it is maybe for a team to go perfect throughout the course of the season. Now, again, you can find different examples throughout the course of college tennis history, but it's pretty limited on both sides. You've gotten to see both in person. What's the more difficult thing?
Yeah, I mean, I give her a lot of credit. I think what she's done this year, the consistency that she's brought, I think has been phenomenal. I think that's just something that's really been something we could count on as a team, and that's carried over to us doing that. But I still think that you got to value that 29-0 for the team, because I think to get everybody being very consistent, you know, while Kristina has been a rock for us and super consistent, I'm so proud of the entire group, because the entire group has had to be very consistent and step up and support each other all the way through. And Kristina has been a great example of that. But to go 29-0 really means that everybody has kind of had to hold on to the rope all season long and do their part. And I think that's been the remarkable thing so far.
Yeah, it's, again, been across the board. Yesterday there was a moment, and it was in a point she lost, I want to say 5-3 first set, where Obi ripped a backhand cross. And I was just like, ha, that's pretty funny. And she like kind of came in. The problem is she missed up. She tried to come in behind it, like didn't really kind of fluff the half forehand volley back up. And ended up, you're shaking your head as if you remember the point.
Oh, yeah.
Which, yeah. So that, but I watched that backhand cross and I was like, like, okay. Like, I was unfamiliar that you had that in your bag. And this is a nerdy question, but what's the next piece for her tennis wise? Like, what have you seen in year one getting to work with her?
You know, I think one of the things that she does really well is her movement. I think she's one of the better movers in college tennis. I think it's hard for girls to win points because the girls will change direction on her, do some different things, and she's there. And it's surprising, you know, even watching it still now, there's still some balls that I see a girl hit, and then all of a sudden Obi's just there. And the second thing I would say that she does really well, to your point, is, you know, she opens the court so well with her angles off both sides. She's able to hit some angles. It's a little unorthodox how it looks. And I think that's always creates the surprise for people. Yeah. I think for her, it's just continuing to manage that, manage, you know, how to manage each match and work on that, because she has so many tools. I think transition game is still something like for her, like she does so well when she moves forward, stays on the baseline, takes those balls out of the air, and puts so much pressure. For me, I think she puts so much pressure on girls because she's up on top of the baseline. She's moving. She doesn't have to back off the baseline much to still defend. And so she can stay in a very neutral to aggressive position and still defend as well as anybody. So I think just continuing then to like seek those opportunities moving forward, because she's already in such a good position, I think that's the next step for her.
No, it's... You kind of mentioned it there. She doesn't get enough credit for how good of an athlete she is. Because you're right. Like, the technique is not aesthetically traditional, we'll to call it. And yet, like, she is everywhere. And it's just like, it's the old adage of two players run to first base, one with great technique, one with poor technique. Who would you rather have? And you're like, give me the bad technique because I teach him good technique and watch how fast he gets to first. And it's like, that's Obi. It's like, in my mind, it's like, that's her. And again, another just like, silent assassin 18-3 year. Just so impressive what she's done. And across the board, by the way, like the power of Carrington. I mean, Komar does three things a match that make you laugh. And maybe three things a point where both you laugh. What's the Jimmy V speech? Laugh, cry, whatever. Like, that's a good day. That's the Komar maybe experience in point. What's practice been like all year long? How do you balance, you know, again, letting all those talents loose without them making sure, like, hey, let's not kill each other here?
Yeah, I think it's been good. And I think that's where, you know, very fortunate to have a good staff with Jaime and Sam and the quality of coaches that we have and the things that they can bring. And, you know, I think between the three of us, just dividing and conquering and doing some different things. One of the things about this team is they love to compete. And they're so competitive that you got to manage that a little bit as well in practice. But, you know, they want to be out there playing points and doing things. But, you know, overall, I think we've got into just going back to, you know, how we started this conversation, got into like, this is a rhythm of what our days and what our weeks look like. And we do that and the kids know what to expect. They believe in it. They believe in you know, what we're doing. And then, you know, I think just each of them, every kid kind of identifies with different people in different ways. And so I think we have, you know, the three of us can work with the different girls at different moments and do different things and create a good balance and a camaraderie with everybody. And so, you know, I realize that I'm very fortunate to have people around me that can do so many great things with the girls on the court, that I think the girls have everything that they need covered.
Yeah, I let the record show. I already submitted Sam's name for the open Michigan assistant job. Like, she doesn't have to. It's already been submitted. She doesn't have a choice.
Hey now.
looking at the, you know, again, this season, 29-0, national indoor champions. There's a lot of different places you could turn to for your highlights of the year. I'm trying to come up with my nominees for every coach. You know, we've talked about some. I guess we haven't revisited that national indoor championship, but you have that Big 12 championship. That one had to be special because not only do you win the tournament for the first time since 16, you did it on home soil for the second consecutive time you've had it in Stillwater. Obviously, you know, again, I'm sure the Texas match in the quarterfinals has to be on that short list as well. Texas and Austin has to be on the short list. Give me the highlight of the season for the 2024 Cowgirls.
I mean, I think you got to start with the indoor championship. Yeah. I mean, I think that's where this team solidified itself as a contender, to go through those matches that we did, and just the way that they did it and the toughness that they showed. You know, anytime you beat Auburn, Texas, Stanford, Michigan, you know, that's four really tough matches because of the quality of opponents, the quality of coaching that those opponents have, and just the environment of the indoors. You know, 4 days in a row, it's a grind. And it's challenging. And, you know, we were playing those late matches and not a lot of turnaround. And I think that, you know, really showed me a lot about our team after the Texas match and how difficult that was and how late into the night that was. Then to turn around and play a Stanford team that definitely had more rest than us, that was more fresh. And you know, we didn't let that show. And so, you know, that said a lot about the team. And then, you know, to have to play Michigan in the finals. I mean, we have so much respect for Ronnie and her staff and her team and what they do, and to beat them a second time when it was, the stakes were even higher, and it wasn't at home. I think that was a big moment for us.
I think the highlight of my season, just so you know, involved when your lovely wife Sarah came up to me and goes, "Oh, we love the holiday card." And all I could think in my head is, "I'm sorry, who are you? Like, have we met before? Like, you saw the holiday card?" She goes, "Oh, I'm Chris's wife." And I go, "Oh, this is," I was like, "Thank you. I'm glad you liked it." It was, again, one of my highlights of the year, and it was great to get to meet her. And again, looking forward to getting to hang.
Yeah, she's the first person that opened the Gruskin holiday family holiday card, and she's like, "Do we know this family?" And the funny thing is, she thought it would be hilarious. She played a prank on one of our family members and sent like a random holiday card to a family member, and we mailed it from a different place and everything. And so, like, for the longest time, they were like asking around, like, you know, who in the family knew this one particular family, the Smiths or whatever it was, and no one could figure it out, you know. And so then we thought someone had pulled the same prank. She thought someone had pulled the same prank on her when she got the Gruskin holiday card. And so I'm like, no, we know this guy. You're going to get to know him really well in Stillwater here.
It's great. No, I knew I liked her. That's a great story. I appreciate you sharing that. Yeah. Again, one of my highlights of the season. On the other end of that, what's been the most unexpected part of this 2024 run?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, I would just say the bonding of this team. You know, I think so many new pieces, you know, I think just kind of challenges of meshing a team together and seeing the way that this team really has come together both on and off the court. And you know, that to me is special because ultimately that's what you coach for is the relationships and the building of those things. And to see those things taking place between, you know, the players themselves, the coaches, everybody, I think that it's just been, you know, one cohesive group kind of building together. That's been a fun part of it. And, you know, you never know what to expect. You know, each year as you start the year, everybody has high expectations that those things will all come together, but you do it long enough to know that it doesn't always kind of mesh together. So I think that's important.
No, especially I imagine bringing in three transfers, I want to say, in the offseason to have them mesh as quickly as they all have. I mean, I'm sure it helped that Carrington and Komar were teammates prior to coming to Oklahoma State. But yeah, I mean, I got to hang around your group. It is definitely a fun group to be around. You know, we've highlighted, obviously, all the big statistical notes. I'm curious if, and the way I'm describing it as a pet project, if there's anything from a coaching perspective with this team, on the court, off the court, whatever it may be, you focused on that may not get the limelight sort of spotlight it deserves, but something this group has done particularly well, or a specific player maybe that you've been focused on this year.
Yeah, I think with this team, it's hard to really single out a specific player because I think the reason that we've won is the team. You know, I think that one of the things that we've focused a lot is on like serve plus one, return plus one. Like, I think we're a team that has really good ball striking ability. But I think it's really important, like starting the points. I think we have a lot of big servers. I think you look across the board, I would say, you know, all of our girls have the ability to win some free points on serve. And I think Miyamoto even has really come along with that in the development of her game. And I think that's been something that we've really prided ourselves on, that we spend a lot more time even this season than in previous seasons. We've focused on it a lot more. So I would say that's been a big, big factor for us. And, you know, I learned that from Brian Shelton back in his 2007 Georgia Tech team, just, you know, how locked in they were on some of their patterns and those things, and just kind of communicating with him about that. And you know, then you get someone like Craig O'Shaughnessy comes along with the, you know, first four shots, and, you know, it's so imprinted, but you're like thinking about how that impacts your team. And specifically for this group, I think it's been so important because of the ability that these girls have with their ball striking, to play aggressive first strike tennis with the serves and the returns, I think has been a big key.
Yeah. Well, speaking of advice, time machine's been created. First thing they want to do to test it, they come to you. They say, Chris Young, we want to send you back to January 2024 so you can offer some advice to yourself before you coach this season. What would you tell yourself in January?
Don't screw it up.
That's a great answer.
No, I think just enjoy it. You know, I think that sometimes when you have a season like this, you're focusing on the next thing. And so, you know, I think with the challenges of hosting and everything that's been a part of it, you know, I think that's the thing I try to tell myself all the time. People around me tell me, you know, but I think just enjoy the ride with this team because it's special. No matter what happens these next few weeks, I think this has been a special season. So I think that's the part of it. As coaches, sometimes it's always a delayed gratification in this business. And so I think if you can enjoy it along the way, you can have even more success.
I feel bad for every coach that follows you because that's the right answer to that question. That's really good. I appreciate it. It's not going to get cut from the list either. All right. I know this is like asking you to pick your favorite child, but under the premise that you would be comfortable with all of them, and how could you not be? 29-0 feels like everyone's been at this position at least once in the season. But 3-all, third set to decide the match, comes down to one court. Who's the player in the lineup? Win or lose, you go, you know what? If this is who we go down with, I can live with that.
You know, I know this is a maybe a cop-out answer you're going to feel like, but I think in the past, I've always felt like, all right, if it comes down, this is the person, right? Mm-hmm. I honestly think that like I would be comfortable with every single person on the team because we've been in that situation. I think the only person that hasn't been in a 3-all moment in our team is Obi. But if you look at the other five girls, they've all had their moment. Christina clinched against Pepperdine. You start the season, Ayumi, even though it wasn't 4-all, you had Ayumi and Saf on the court against Michigan. Both of them, you know, Ayumi clinches it. And then Lucia has had some big moments. I mean, you know, for us, clinching a couple matches, especially lately. And then Nas clinched the match against Michigan, and the way that she closed out Kari Miller there, I think, was impressive because everybody knows what a good player she is. And then, I mean, Saf, you know, made her mark at the at the indoors with that Texas match, and you know, even how she played the next day against Blakina and Stanford. So, you know, I can't choose in those situations. And I think that's what makes our team special, honestly, is that the grittiness and the toughness of this group, that the number three player in the country is the only person that hasn't had to be in that position. I would think we'd all feel comfortable if it comes down to Obi. But the other girls, I think each one of them has the mentality and the makeup of like a warrior and somebody who loves the pressure moments that I don't think that we would go wrong with any of them. So I hate to disappoint you, but they're all my favorite children.
Yeah. Now the answer then it sounds like is Obi, so that we can see what it looks like. Okay. I think that's what it sounds like. What coach do you pick? So you, Sam, or no, I'm just kidding. Yeah. The answer is not you. You're like,
that's right.
Yeah. That's right. Right. Yeah. That's what I figured. All right. Well then moving away from your team, give me a non Oklahoma State team, coach, player, could be any of the three, whatever it is that jumps to your mind from across the country that's impressed you this season.
Man, you're putting me in some tough spots here. there's so much depth. You know, I would say I give, you know, Michigan a ton of credit. They came into this season with all those returning kids. And I think there's, you know, one of those things when there's high expectations to manage that. And I think Ronnie and her staff and those kids have done an amazing job. They've been right up there at the top all season long. And, you know, I think that that's when you kind of got that target from day one, which they had with making the Elite Eight and kind of having everybody up there. I think UNC, you got to give them a ton of credit for rallying after indoors and revamping their lineup and kind of what they do. And I mean, they're as dangerous as anybody. And, you know, I think that's a big factor. I think, you look at UCLA and, you know, after losing to us at the kickoff weekend, that could have really been impactful for them, but they've only gotten stronger from that. You look at Texas and you know, what they've been able to manage to do without their number one player for half the year and still a top 10 team. And then Tennessee, I think, is somebody that has really, like, impressed me, just the consistency they've had. So, try to give you a little bit about each of our opponents coming up. So, wishing for any of them.
I want you to know, I figured it out halfway through UCLA. I was like, oh, I think he's just going through the potential opponents. I was like, I really like this. This is very funny. And so, no, I love that. Well, that brings me to my next question. And you know what? I'm going to exclude your entire side, not your entire side, but your little quarter of the bracket. So you can't say Texas-UCLA, as good as that matchup might be. Give me your non-your quarter favorite Sweet 16 matchup in the draw. I can give them to you if you need them, by the way.
No. I'm well aware.
That's why I like working with you.
I think everybody's excited about the UNC A&M match. There's so much talent and firepower on both of those teams. I think that's going to be a good one. I think Georgia Cal is another one. I mean, just
my favorite
teams that are playing so well right now. You know, there's probably two of the hottest teams in the country. So I think that's it. And then, you know, you look at Stanford, NC State. I mean, a rematch of last year's semis in the round of 16. I think sometimes that's always kind of interesting. You go year to year and you really got to get a little bit of luck in the draw. And sometimes you have to play those matches earlier than you'd like to in the draw. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think there's a bad matchup anywhere across the board. I mean, you look at it, it's like, wow, this is going to be an exciting weekend. And the eight teams that get to Stillwater are going to be definitely teams that deserve it.
Yeah, Michigan, Miami, Ronnie's return against her former or her alma mater. You have Vanderbilt taking on Virginia as well. I could talk you through why all six singles matches will be interesting in that too. So I agree. It's going to be a really fun weekend of tennis. We're excited to show it all. I mean, and let the record show, to this question, you guys, you can answer yourself. Is there a national championship favorite?
Ooh. Yeah, that's a tough question because, you know, I think if you have a team that's undefeated, you know, all season long, I think that, you know, that's the team that's got to be beat by somebody. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think that there's 16 teams that to me are all very capable and very dangerous. You know, I know from experience of seeing, you know, a team like we had in 2016, that was the 12 seed that got hot at the right time. And you go into it and, you know, we just believed that we could beat anybody. And so I think that confidence is a crazy thing. And I think I would say, you know, I would answer probably no to the question because I think there's so many teams that are capable. And that's the great thing about the growth of our sport. I mean, I think if you asked that question 10 years ago, for sure, 5 years ago, you probably could always pick a favorite from the beginning of the season. That favorite's going to be there, one of the few teams at the end. It's so unpredictable. The last 10 years of college tennis have been kind of the heyday as far as I feel like of growing our sport because of the unpredictability and the parity. And that's what makes sports great. And that's what makes tournaments fun is the unpredictability of it all. I don't think we were the favorite going into the indoors, and we were able to kind of rise up. And so hopefully we're able to do the same here, but we definitely respect everybody, especially Tennessee, who's our next opponent.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair answer. I certainly, though, as you alluded to, I think I said it at the start of the NCAA selection show, like, if you can't get excited about an undefeated team down the postseason stretch, you're not doing fandom correctly. You have a head start on my next question. I got two left for you because we've had this conversation. So I guess I'm testing your memory here. It's a trivia question I want to ask every coach because I want to educate the college tennis universe. You need to know this fact. The last undefeated NCAA men's and women's Division I champions. Can you name them each, coach?
Women's is 2006 Stanford, correct?
First person to get a year correct. So shout out to you. You are now officially, well, tied for the lead because there have been coaches who have gotten both programs right, but no one got a year before you. So congratulations. That is correct. Do you know the men's?
Undefeated national champion. Virginia? Is it a Virginia team?
All right. You are officially in the lead. It is a Virginia team. You're 3-for-4. Can you get the year? This is really exciting for me. I was wondering if
I get this wrong, is DT going to be really upset with me?
I can't answer that question because that would be a hint.
I'm going to say...
That's a great question, though. Drum roll, please.
2013
Virginia, the last end. If DT was not a member of undefeated teams, they lost at Wake. that Virginia team, which was that, you know what, DT gave me a great story about it. I don't know if it was on the record or off, so I'm going to leave the details off of this show, but that was their one loss that season. Broke my heart. I was a senior in college, a big Virginia guy back then. Anyways, those 3-for-4, though. So just let the record show. You're in the lead, which I certainly will keep track of throughout the course of this series. My last question for you. Obviously, I want to get everyone excited about the NCAA matchups coming up this weekend. I want to break my thoughts on the matchup and then get every coach's assessment on my thoughts. That way, I don't put you on the spot too much. But looking at this Tennessee match ahead for your team, I think they're competitive everywhere. That would be my answer if someone asked me, give me the match calculus. I think Tennessee can legitimately beat you guys at all 7 spots. I don't think they'd be favored to beat you at any of the spots. But I think they do have that sort of talent, 1 through 6 and in doubles. I think Wolfberg coming home, like, that can always amp up a player. Obviously, former Oklahoma State player. You have a Sophia Cabezas playing against her former teammate, Obi Kajuru. Like, that's something to get up for as well, and she's been outstanding this year. I just think they are going to push you guys everywhere. Like, I guess that would be my assessment of this match. Yes, it's 1 through 16, but it gets to our overall theme of parity. I think, like, the Cowgirls got to be ready.
Oh, no question. I mean, a lot of respect for Allison and Matias and, you know, what they've done this year. I think they compete as hard as any team out there. So they're not going to give you an inch. And it all starts with doubles. I think, Allison has always done a great job with her teams in doubles. I think they always play with good energy. So we understand the importance of that. And you're right. 1 through 6, look at their lineup, and they've got talent, you know, all the way down. I mean, we obviously are familiar with Alana's talent and ability and how she plays in big matches. And, Lauren Anzalata was once signed member of the Cowgirls. we know some of these kids very well. And then Cabezas from competing against her at Iowa State, in our conference for a couple years. So there's a lot of familiarity with the majority of their lineup and a lot of respect for the way that those girls compete and the way that they're coached. So, yeah, there's no, we're not going to sleep too comfortably this week knowing that we got to be prepared for this match coming up on Saturday. There's a lot of work to be done to get to the final site.
Yeah, it's going to be really exciting. Looking forward to it. And, you know, certainly something else I'm looking forward to is being at the final site in Stillwater and all you guys are doing to make that an extraordinary event. And, you know, again, can't emphasize enough, really appreciate your support of our Cracked Rackets team, coach, and very much looking forward to being down there for a fun 2 weeks. So thank you for taking the time to chat today. And obviously, good luck to you and the Cowgirls this weekend.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I mean, 10 days till the final site begins, and after 8 years of prep, it's shocking that it's already here. So it's going to be fun, and we appreciate you being a part of it.
No, of course. Yeah, we're 7 days away from Westhoff and I, Lewis and Park, and get across the Midwest to get to Stillwater with our 2 computers. So looking forward to the drive, looking forward to seeing you, and appreciate you taking the time to chat today.
All right, man. Appreciate it.